Hello and welcome to Open Channels FM. This episode is brought to you by Woo, the platform helping merchants of all sizes power their online stores. From flexible payments to performance optimization, Woo gives businesses the tools to grow and compete, whether it's your first sale or your millionth.
You're listening to Emerging Tech, part of the Open Web Conversations channel, which is an Open Channels FM production. I'm your host today, Dave Lockie. I work at Automattic as a strategy wrangler. And on today's show, I've got Sam from Arweave. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Dave. Great to be with you.
So I guess like a little intro to yourself, how people can find you, and then tell us, Sam, what is Arweave?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Sam. I founded a decentralized storage network called Arweave. Basically, the idea of Arweave is to build a permanent knowledge base for humanity that is shared between all people and not controlled by any one centralized party. It takes the idea of storing data inside blockchains, which actually, interestingly, was the first use of a blockchain. Satoshi Nakamoto stored a record from, or the headline from a newspaper in the first block of the network, long before it was used for any kind of value transfer. But the problem was that, and well, that is interesting because that information, that headline, is replicated in many, many places around the world now. It's really very, very hard to believe that we will lose that information for hundreds of years from this point. We thought that was exciting when we were starting to build Arweave, but we saw that you couldn't store large amounts of data inside. And so essentially with Arweave, we've created a permanent decentralized web that lives inside a blockchain-like structure where rather than people paying, well, the network paying for essentially expenditure of energy, it goes instead to paying for replication of the network's data set. And then there's an endowment inside the system which pays for that data storage over time. So that's sort of what it is at the base layer. But what it looks like when people engage with it is it looks like the normal web, except you can access it through many different entry points, and each of those entry points is independent. And so there is no centralized controller, no person that can come along and censor or change the data. It's open and neutral and transparent, which I think might be interesting for the WordPress community because, you know, the thing that I see when I look at WordPress from the outside is, well, this is where the bastion of a decentralized or distributed web still exists in the modern age. So WordPress is this huge part of the internet as it currently stands and is about the only place. I mean, yeah, it's hard to think of any others really where there are many different disparate websites that are run by different operators that don't one way or another roll up to a single centralized party that is controlling it. Everything else has moved to, you know, the major web platforms essentially. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of sort of aligned ideas there, and I'm excited for how Arweave can be used basically to replicate that data inside WordPress sites and make it first more permanent, but also more resilient. So it's now not just dependent even potentially on that one sort of silo remaining online, the WordPress website itself, but could potentially be pulled down in other places and accessed through more decentralized means. Yeah, so that's the sort of broad outline. And about, I just got started building this because I saw that, you know, we live in a vastly different information economy than we did before the internet. And yet the archiving technologies that we use are essentially ancient. They're the same ideas. And so we felt that an internet native archive was necessary. And I quit my PhD doing distributed systems design in order to build it. And that was, 8 years ago. And it's been incredible ride at this point. Now there's 20 billion pieces of information inside Arweave, and growing all the time. So
20 billion, that is impressive. So yeah, like just to recap and make sure I've got it right, if Bitcoin is a decentralized protocol for internet native money, then Arweave is designed to, well, it is the same idea. It's a decentralized protocol, but for content storage. Information storage.
Yeah, decentralized protocol for exactly trustless information storage, where information is published and is in the public domain outside the control of anyone.
So one of the challenges of WordPress and this sort of, you know, the decentralized or at least distributed web is that you don't enjoy things like automatic backup. So if you forget to pay your hosting fees or lose your control panel access or you get hacked, etc., you can lose the site and all of your data, all of the content that you've worked hard to create. And sometimes you get lucky, you can pull bits from Google crawl cache or archive.is. You know, there are some archiving tools on the web, but link rot remains a major problem. I mean, I looked at this for a piece of work I was doing internally and I was surprised. I mean, even in legal like casework, there's a very high percentage of links that are dead, like links where the content no longer exists. And these are citations in legal cases. I think it was something like 30%. So that's the sort of thing that Arweave can help address by making sure that there is this kind of internet native archiving built in. You can't just lose a site and lose all of the content as a consequence.
Yeah, exactly. I think that study even was looking at Supreme Court cases. These are not like...
Yes, that's right.
I mean, nothing in the legal domain is trivial, but that's got to be the maximally untrivial venue. And yes, it's interesting because I guess as humans, we find it quite difficult to imagine like long-term, long-tail problems. You know, if something works today, generally we sort of get on with whatever we've got to do next. But when you look back at, you know, the internet from 20 years ago, I think it's something like 1.5 to 2% of those links still work and report to the same content as they did 20 years ago. It's virtually nothing. But we don't really think about this on a day-to-day basis because, well, 20 years is a long time, right? And yet, so there are ways that people can use, you know, if you have content on your WordPress site today that is sort of external in some form, you can just replace those links with Arweave links, and then at least that content is always around. Yeah, and that's what we've been helping people do in various different forms now for nearly a decade. And yeah, I'm excited to see in 20 years' time when all of those links still work. That'll be, yeah, would you say, a sense of accomplishment. 8 years is good, but you know, we want much longer. So,
yeah, definitely. So I've played around with Arweave, but since vibe coding became possible, and even over the last year or two, I've seen a change in the way that we've worked. So let's just touch on the way that one pays for Arweave. So as like in a normal web to like the usual web services that we pay for, domains and hosting and Amazon S3, you pay on an ongoing basis to keep those services active. So every month, if I don't pay my AWS bill, then they will eventually close my account, delete my data, and that data is gone forever. Whereas with Arweave, it's a pay once, store forever model. And that's a really crucial difference because it means that your credit card expires or you lose your PayPal password or whatever it is, you don't then lose the content that you've saved to the Weave, it's called, right? The underlying data structure?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, well, personally, every time I hear the word forever, I cringe a little bit because we're very, very serious about the mission here, which there's no elegant, precise definition for in English or a single word that relates to it. But the goal is to store data for the maximum possible time period. And we really mean maximum. Yeah, forever, inevitably, you know, Arweave will, before the heat death of the universe, it will no longer function as it does today. But it is intended to function for an extremely, extremely long period of time. And you're absolutely right. The way that works is through an endowment contribution when you upload your data rather than a single payment. So when you pay AWS or you know, any other type of web host, you pay on a month-to-month basis. You stop paying and you know, the service goes away. Whereas with Arweave, what you're doing instead is in the same way that Bitcoin has a neutral monetary policy. So everyone can introspect it and essentially see when the tokens will be created and what the general sort of financial economy of the system is. You can do the same with Arweave, and we use that same property of trustless execution of a monetary policy. But we apply it to a different problem, which is, okay, You want to store data for the maximum possible time period. How do you do it? Well, you pay for 200 years worth of storage at present prices when you upload the data and put the tokens in the first place, which sounds like it should be expensive, but actually the cost of storage is so low that, 200 years is really, it works out at, I think $12 to $15 per gig at the moment, something in that order. And so you don't want to store like 4K security camera footage overnight somewhere you're never going to look at. That's not an appropriate use of the system. But for very valuable documents or writing, text is extremely, extremely small. And so to store your blog post for 200 years plus worth of time at least, then it costs like a fraction of a cent typically. So in certain, or for certain types of data, it's actually very, very affordable. And the interesting thing about the model is, okay, so you pay for 200 years worth of storage at present prices today, but as the cost of storage declines over time, the horizon, essentially the runway of the of your data being stored in the system, expands out. So if the cost of storage declines at a rate of 0.5% on average in a year, and you start with 200 years worth of storage power at the beginning of the year, by the end, you've still got 200 years worth of storage power, storage purchasing power, rather, which is a very interesting effect. It's essentially utilizing the deflationary effect of people's ingenuity, I guess, in data encoding technologies to make the system sustainable for arbitrarily long time periods. And so it has a very, very different economic model. And the last thing to point out about that is probably that because Arweave buys its storage from a decentralized network of providers, like anyone listening to this could go and boot up a node themselves now if they wanted to and get paid for storing data, the barrier to entry is vastly, vastly different to starting a service like AWS. And because AWS, you have to gain trust from your users, and you also have to gain distribution. Just people need to know about your service. And interestingly, Arweave buys its storage from its miners for about 78 cents per terabyte month, whereas AWS will sell you storage at a rate of about $23 per terabyte month on S3 for the equivalent tier of access rights. So while you're paying a lot more for the upfront contribution rather than paying per month, actually, because they extort so wildly in the centralized market, based really on that distribution and trust effect that they've managed to garner, it still ends up being not that much more expensive. I think it's about 7 years or something costs on S3 equate to the cost of storage on Arweave permanently. And no one can tell you precisely how long that is, but the model is open and transparent. You can look at it yourself. You can read the papers and assess the risk and how long you think it will last. But it's a radically different form of storage in that way.
A lifetime is like probably a reasonable way to think about it.
Right. Ideally, three lifetimes. That was I don't think we succeeded unless it outlives 200 years. And interestingly, we picked that number because we felt that, people that are skeptical about this, and I would understand that. I think had I been on the outside, I would also be, permanent storage? How's that work?
Yeah,
I'd be suspicious. Well, if the price of storage never declines again, that 200 years is three lifetimes. It's pretty damn permanent as it goes. But we actually expect that the price of storage will decline quite significantly in the future. It has a very, very long track record of doing so, even before digital storage medium came about, actually. But that's a whole separate conversation.
That sounds like a rabbit hole for you, me, and a beer at some point.
Sure.
So let's switch gears slightly and talk about distribution. So one of the reasons that AWS is such a massive profit center for Amazon is that they made it very, originally used to be, quick, easy, and simple to spin up like infrastructure on demand, if you needed compute or storage or whatever. There's APIs and everything is designed to be automatable and scalable and everything else. Now, I referred back to my own kind of vibe coding stuff with Arweave and a WordPress plugin. It was remarkably simple to get working in that kind of simple concept of it, by the way. But over the last year, I've noticed that there are now bundlers, and you upload to Arweave through one of these bundling services, you can upload up to 100 kilobytes for free. I mean, that's how cheap it is to, I mean, like by inference, that's how cheap it is to store on Arweave. That if you're pushing something up, like a text object, like a typical WordPress post, if you just take the text and push it up, that's going to be less than 100 kilobytes. So people could essentially back up their WordPress posts for free to Arweave right now.
Yes, that's true. The network doesn't subsidize that, but Forward Research, our company, does at this point.
Right.
Now, in the future, you know, 5 years down the line, maybe it doesn't quite work like that. But yeah, for now, there's, you're right, 100 kilobytes is so cheap on Arweave, we can happily subsidize it. It doesn't even touch our, yeah, it's a very, very small part of our operating model.
And the developer tooling, I guess now AWS and other API first business, you know, Stripe and everyone else have kind of paved the way for how to build great developer experience. You've managed to do the same thing with Arweave with, you know, a heck of a lot lower budget than AWS needed to spin that, all those concepts up from scratch. So I guess what I'm trying to say is a developer shouldn't be put off by the idea that this is like new fancy, you know, crypto Web3 stuff. In terms of actually using it, it's all the tooling that you're used to. You can mess about with it for free, certainly for now, and that there are a number of GUI based tools, you know, like just sort of not even needing any code, that you can use to go and upload stuff to Arweave and mess about with it. So it's very, very accessible right now.
Right. Yeah. I actually think that building decentralized web applications should, in its eventual form, and I think we're pretty close already, depending on the complexity of the thing you want to build, should be far easier than building on a centralized web, because infrastructure, like, it's annoying to run. And if it goes down, then you got to go fix it. Whereas here we have open, neutral, and sort of self-organizing infrastructure that replicates the data around and makes sure your site or your whatever it is you're uploading, your content, is available from many, many, many places. And so it really should be much easier to build on the decentralized web in its eventual form than it would be to deal with. I don't know about you, but every time I look at the AWS management console, I sort of die a little bit inside. It's unboundedly complex. And I think that that probably stems from the fact they just haven't had real competition. I mean, they're so entrenched that they can afford for the product to be terrible and overpriced, but people are paying for trust and distribution, essentially, which...
Nobody gets fired for buying AWS, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. Except actually, you know, far more trustworthy is just open source software that you can audit yourself and understand how it works, and you can read and assess the economic model for yourself, like you are sovereign in the system, in a way that really you never will be with AWS and friends. And so, yeah, it's very easy to get started with today. Like, if you're building a full web application, and there's a bunch of tools to help you deploy it to Arweave easily, and yeah, most of the time it's completely free. And if you do end up paying, you know, if you go over 100 kilobytes and you do end up paying for it, you can also pay with credit cards and debit cards around the world. And basically what happens in the back end is that there's a service, one would be Turbo from the Aria team, that just converts, basically buys tokens and uploads the data for you, and you can pay them with Stripe. It's very simple. Feels like using a Web2 service. And if you want to get started, you know, just uploading with a UI, you can use RDrive, for example. So if you just go to RDrive. Well, actually, any Arweave gateway, you can go to rdrive.arweave.net or rdrive.ar.io or rdrive.gateway.io, I think is another one. There's about 400 of these things. It's a properly decentralized web application. Just lets you, yeah, drag and drop and deploy any kinds of content that you might want to use in your site and link out to or embed in the same ways you normally would.
Awesome. So if you're building for WordPress right now, you can use Arweave for backups, just using drag and drop. You know, if you need to do a migration, you've got a bunch of content somewhere, you're exporting it, you're putting it somewhere else, you can stick that back up on Arweave. It's there as long as you need it, and it's very cheap to do, and you don't need any coding skills, you don't need any development. You just go to a website, upload it, and Bob's your uncle, which is cool. Or if you want to get your hands dirty, or rather probably Claude or Cursor's hands dirty, then you can build an integration so that, for example, every time you post a WordPress post, it will push that content up into the Weave as a backup. And you can imagine doing that for, so WordPress has a built-in versioning system, but that takes up space on disk. And if you have a lot of content and a lot of versions, that can start slowing down your WordPress database. If you're offloading that versioning to our Weave, then you can stay very nimble in terms of your on-site architecture. And I guess the same goes for attachment storage as well. If you don't want to rely on your, I've got to say WordPress.com hosting account, but you know, your wherever you host your WordPress, if you don't want to clog that up with all of the media, the video, the images, the audio that you upload, then you could offload the media to Arweave and just embed the audio, video or picture like that, you know, just make it a media library integration so that you're keeping your WordPress site itself, I guess, entirely resilient and to have these redundancies. You know, you've got your media offloaded, you've got your content backed up, and so if your site falls over, then you can just reconstruct it because all of the underlying elements are out there. And that's assuming that you're not just pushing like a whole backup up to our Weave on a daily or weekly basis.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And you could just do that. You could export the site, upload the, you know, the archive that you get out of it, and then just load from that whenever you need to in the future as well.
Woo recently released their 2025 Black Friday Cyber Monday survey. The results are eye-opening, and it shows a clear preparation gap between larger and smaller merchants. Million-dollar stores are planning earlier, optimizing site speed, and offering advanced payment options like buy now, pay later at 3 to 4 times the rate of smaller businesses. But here's the good news. Woo's put together a full guide so every merchant can use these insights to boost sales this holiday season. If you want practical tips on site performance, payment integration, and getting ready for Black Friday, head to the link in the show notes or check out the full survey results and strategies on their blog at woocommerce.com/blog.
Now, I'm going to switch gears a bit and move into the kind of like forward looking, I guess, beyond the basics and then kind of starting to look into the future. So one of the things that I love that Arweave have done is this concept of atomic assets. So let me see if I can explain that to our listeners, and then you can tell me all the ways in which it was incomplete or incorrect. So most WordPress developers will be familiar with the idea of a WordPress post as a JSON object. You know, WordPress has a REST API built in. You can request a post, it gets returned as a JSON object, and that object can then be used for whatever purpose. Like a typical purpose would be to have like a headless WordPress site where WordPress, the CMS, is managing the content, but the content is then being accessed from and displayed on a totally separate, like static front end, you know, all powered by JavaScript. So I guess conceptually, if you take that WordPress post, you structure it slightly differently and you add a few extra fields and push it up to Arweave, what you end up with is something called an atomic asset. And an atomic asset is a particular standard for storing stuff on Arweave. And its aim is to make that piece of content, that asset, complete in a totally standalone basis. So what do I mean by that? When you publish a WordPress post, that post is tied to a specific URL that is, you know, part of a domain and then a site structure. It also typically doesn't contain information about the author beyond who they are on that WordPress site. It doesn't have a concept of like a global author. It typically doesn't include usage rights, such as, is it Creative Commons? Is it copyright? How, like, can other people use this? And if so, how? And it also often doesn't include a concept of monetization. Like, okay, you can use this content, but I would like to be paid on this basis. And this is how you do it and how much it costs. I'm probably leaving out a bunch, but that's the idea, right? Is to like bundle all of the things that somebody interacting with a piece of content might know might want to know into one package so that you can use it, you can remunerate the author, you can contact the author, you can see what else that content relates to, and you can display it in your own experience in a way that is both complete and respectful of all of the connections and metadata, I guess, that post has. Tell me how I can improve that mental model.
Yeah, no, you can't see me, unfortunately, but I am nodding. This was okay. The great explanation. Yeah, the basic idea is that content on the internet is not just bytes. It's bytes plus a bunch of metadata that really is necessary in order to understand what the content is. And you're absolutely right to put the emphasis on authorship rights. You know, the content that's available is openly, would you say, addressable, which is great. But you have to be respectful of, well, who made it? And, you know, what ways would they like to be remunerated, if at all, for the content that they've created? And so an atomic asset basically lets you upload a piece of content, have it be displayable in any other application, but it moves atomically, hence the name, with all of the information that is necessary to display it correctly. And that includes who to pay for access to the content. It's quite interesting, if you have an atomic asset, if you send someone the link, inherent within the link is the sort of ownership rights of the content itself. So anyone can access this content, for example, might be one rule, but you should please pay, you know, X micro dollars, I suppose, in order to do so. And what we're building towards with this is a web where the sort of platform creator relationship is turned inside out to the centralized web. So on the centralized web, yeah, I mean, the audience here, you know, publishing with WordPress, so have evidently seen this problem and are working around it already to some extent. But if you were to publish on X or on YouTube or any of these other large platforms, you give the right for YouTube and whoever that platform is to distribute your content, and then basically give you some amount of money back that they get to determine, and they get to change the rules around that at any time. And that gives the platforms an enormous amount of power, because if you build up an audience on those platforms, well, your access to that audience is completely dependent on that company and by the nature of companies themselves. And I don't see any moral failing with this. It's just the nature of the sort of deal, the agreement that has been made between the parties. Well, that company is there to extract as much value as it can from its audience. And you know, then there's a market where they're basically providing a service that is useful to people, but they're also trying to extract as much profit as they can from it. This leads, I mean, this, would you say, the elegance of that market structure works only questionably, really, when there are such large monopolies, because practically speaking, you know, you have quite a difficult time building up an audience outside of them. And so instead, what we see is, well, content is the bedrock of the web. What if we made it so that the platforms were consumers of the content? They queried an open database, which Arweave is. You can query it and ask for, hey, I'd like all of the content that is, I know, content type, it's JPEG or something, and has some tags related to dogs or whatever it is you happen to want. And then you can display it on your site. But your site is just a sort of pass-through, basically, for the connection between the creator and the audience, the person actually accessing the content. And as a developer, this is really exciting too, because you don't have the cold start problem, right? Every time you start a new application, you're starting with an empty database, which you have to then fashion into something that is worthy of the attention of the audience. Here, it's the other way around. You start with all of the data on the web, or the permaweb, we call it, the web inside Arweave. It's about 20 billion pieces of information that spans a huge number of different topics and, let's say, types of content and all the rest. You start with that as your database on day one, and then you can make an experience that's much more exciting and engaging for people, just building on that data that's already available. And as a content creator, you can upload to this network. It's not a platform. There's no company that intermediates it. We, our company started the network, but we certainly don't run it today. It's neutrally held public infrastructure, basically, at this point. And you can set the access rights. So then when a platform comes along and they do want to use your content, well, sure, they can do, but there's a legal license associated with it that tells them the ways that they can do that and how they can pay you for the right to do so. So yeah, we're really trying to move towards this model of the web where it is content native and then applications are just thin layers on top. And to your point about vibe coding, I think this is, what'd you say, the time is now for this type of model. The world where, like, you know, you build a little web application, then it becomes a company because you have to host all the infrastructure and you run it like a business, that just really isn't necessarily anymore. Because, you know, you can throw together something fun and cool in Claude. You build on a huge database of existing content, and it's a fun experience that people can use. You pay to upload it once. The web UI is then essentially available in many, many different places. Your users can find it over time. You as the person that uploaded it don't have any usage fees related to the application. Yeah, I think we're moving to a world where the application side of things, the user interfaces, become thinner and thinner and less relevant. And really, it's all about the content. And that's what Arweebits is, giant open content lake that, yeah, allows you to be paid for making great content that other people want to access.
Yeah, I think the cold start solution is really interesting. There's a couple of other things that I've been thinking about more recently as well. One is around the importance of relationships and of nodes versus edges. And you could think about that as, you know, a content is a represents an edge. So if you've got two people in a network, then often it's a piece of content that connects them rather than there being like a, I guess you have a direct relationship with some people, but typically online that is through a piece of content that somebody creates and somebody reads or somebody collects or buys or whatever it is. So there's also this inherent social network, and I use that term kind of advisedly, but there's also this inherent like people network in Arweave. And there's also an interesting dynamic in terms of content liability as well. Now, the big social media platforms have issues with content moderation, certainly when they can't buy their way out of those issues. But because the content that you're building on in Arweave isn't necessarily hosted, like you're not hosting it, right? You're not uploading it, you're Correct. Not hosting it. That's the direct responsibility of the users. I think there's, and obviously that, you know, law still applies and there's got to, you can't just kind of ignore that stuff, but it changes the, I guess, like the cost and overhead of dealing with that content stuff as well. And it's not to say Arweave is a Wild West. You have content takedown processes and like that is both the network and the individual author's responsibility. As a builder, maybe not so much in the way that it would be if you were, say, like building that T network so that women could share intelligence about men. Like, you wouldn't necessarily have the same kind of data liability that you would if you were building on Arweave. Is that fair?
Yes, exactly. So the liability is with the data storers, the nodes in the system. And the way that the process works is that any node is allowed to introspect the data. The data is by default unencrypted. You can choose to encrypt it if you want, but you are liable for the data that you store as a node in Arweave. And then to navigate this, miners. So miners are the people that store data in Arweave, kind of like Bitcoin miners, except they're, you know, doing something useful with their with their expenditure rather than just burning energy. Yes, the node operators, they are the people that are responsible for the content that they store. The platform, which really is actually just that's just data, right? It's HTML, CSS, JavaScript bundled together. It's not upon them to moderate things because they're not storing or hosting any data. In fact, arguably, they're not even helping people upload it. It's just a user interface on top of services that other people run. And so those miners, they get together and they build these content policy lists. So you can, you know, send a message to the network if you want that says, please don't store this piece of content, I know, for a GDPR request or similar. And then in localities where GDPR applies, the miners will make sure not to replicate that information because it is against the law to do so.
Their legal responsibility, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And they self-organize into these groups that have different content policies, and it works. It works well. It's also intended to, the core reason we started RWEAP in the first place was because we wanted there to be a system that was resilient to political censorship on the internet. We saw, and unfortunately are seeing, that the internet in the West is becoming more and more closed, like some countries elsewhere in the world. And we wanted to make sure that there was a mechanism where, politically important content, the types of things that people would want to make sure become part of the historical record for future humans to look back on and to understand how our world today worked and what people were thinking and feeling at that time, they can store it in a network that will distribute it across so many geographies that, you know, practically speaking, political speech would never really be censored. Because that which is illegal in, let's say, Turkey, just to give one random example, it's not illegal in China and vice versa. However, there is certain types of content that virtually universally is deemed to be reprehensible, and subsequently no one in the network will store it. And so it has a nice sort of mechanism for dealing with this complex problem of, you know, what content should become part of the permanent record of humanity.
And it
doesn't require a centralized controller. Like our company, if we said tomorrow, which we definitely wouldn't do, but no Xi Jinping, Winnie the Pooh pictures, it wouldn't matter. We barely run any nodes at all. In fact, we just run them for testing purposes. It would be up to the node operators to all decide, well, Xi Jinping, Winnie the Pooh is not something we want to store, which is very, very hard to imagine would really happen. So you have trustlessness of data replication over time as a consequence of the decentralized nature of decision-making, basically. You would need everyone to make a terrible error at the same moment in order for the content not to be stored, which for almost all types of content really is not an applicable problem. And so, that was the core thing we were setting out to solve.
Yeah, amazing. So there's a couple of things on my mind. I also want to make sure I leave you some time to get over anything that you think the WordPress community needs to hear. I want to share first like a mental model, which is at the moment we think of content as sort of belonging to a website, of being subservient to a website. You go to the website and then on to the content, you know, like the domain comes first and then the content is like the path off the domain. And for me, there's like this, I guess the original sin or the root cause of a lot of the centralization of power that we've seen online started with databases. Like until Bitcoin, there wasn't really a concept of an open source database, like an open database. And of course you can open source code, you can download it and they run it, but as soon as you download it and you need to connect it to a database and store data, then like suddenly the amount of liability and responsibility and like the difficulty of doing that in an open web way just increases exponentially. And so that's when it then became attractive for people to use services that could provide databases, because it's another technology layer. It's kind of difficult. They need to be fast. They need to be, like the whole nature of them draws towards this sort of centralized paradigm. And the thing that, like, one of the things that really excites me about Arweave is the idea to kind of turn that on its head so that the content lives in what's essentially like an open database, like open source code anyone can copy and use and do stuff with. An open database is there for anyone to query and retrieve the data and push data to. And it's not lawless, as we've talked about. There are both legal and economic constraints and incentives to manage that behavior. But you kind of flip it on its head and you think about, well, maybe the role of a website in the future is there. So yes, it's there to help people build and create the content, but perhaps they don't store it locally. Perhaps what they do is they push it into the open database. And then what happens on their website is a curation of that content, content they've created on that site, but also potentially content they've created on a different platform. Could be open source like Ghost, could be a centralized platform like X or Facebook, but somebody's taken that post and saved it to Arweave. So you end up with the relationship between the content and the website sort of flipping, but also taking on this kind of richer and more complex relationship. So yeah, I don't know if you have any comment on that. And then I wanted to talk about AO as well, just to give you like an idea of time and everything else.
Yeah, of course. No, that was perfect. The only thing I would possibly think to add to it is that the way we see it, the web initially envisaged, and certainly the web that I grew up with, I'm 32 now. So I grew up around...
So young. It's ridiculous.
Well, the web I remember when I was younger was much wider and more varied. And that's why the WordPress community, I feel, is so kind of aligned with what we're working on here, which is really maintaining an open platform or an open network of content that people can, you know, remix and use in different ways. That seemed to be inherent to the original vision of the web and has crumbled to the point of, yeah, I really think WordPress is about the only bastion left that is, you know, extremely widely used. And if we don't solve this problem now, I think we are heading towards just tighter and tighter controls of the types of experiences people can have on the web. Like really the browser, about 5 to maybe 10 years ago even, it became just like the dominant application distribution platform. You know, HTML, CSS, JavaScript bundled together is just the way that you write what are more or less desktop applications. And then the number of desktop applications became extremely tight and limited. And about you, but yeah, I feel passionately that if we could have a world where the content was dissociated from the application, then the application space could be much, much wider and iterate in a far, far faster rate. And then we would get back some of that spirit that existed in the early web and hopefully something new as well. So yeah, I just wholeheartedly agree, I suppose.
Great. Yeah, it's daunting to think about how to take on the ludicrous amount of power that the social platforms have. And I don't mean to vilify them, you know, I would be hypocritical to do so. I definitely use them, but that it just makes me more passionate about trying to find ways for the open web to stay competitive in a way that is true to its values and the humane mission and vision of, you know, the internet and open source technology. So we've talked about something that is like quite complex in concept, actually very accessible in terms of utility, and has this tremendous value add now and also promise for more going forward. But you didn't stop there, Sam, with all of your, you said 32 years, right? You didn't stop
yes.
building like a global permanent information storage protocol. You then layered on top of it something called AO. Tell us about AO, Sam.
Yeah, so sort of continuation of the same mission, and it uses Arweave as the base layer. Essentially, what we saw is that, okay, Arweave is an open data lake. You can query it using GraphQL. Actually, there are other querying layers as well, but that's the main one that people use. And so it feels like a database to use. And you can store your web application front ends inside it. And it looks and feels like you're using a web application. It's just kind of magic that you can also go to, I think it's about 400 gateways at the moment. Yeah, 400 different domain names and have the same experience surf back to you. The limitation with Arweave before AO was, okay, well, what if I want to do lots of complex processing, right? An amount of computation that can't be done on the client side. And maybe actually it's just kind of like a bit of a nuisance to do on the client side. It's theoretically possible, but you know, people run easy developer experience, understandably. What if I have real compute requirements for my web application? Well, there wasn't really a technology in the decentralized web space that allowed you to do that. And so that's essentially what we built with AO. It's probably a bit too complex to get into in detail now. But broadly speaking, it is a decentralized computation network that allows you to run your compute workloads on just like Arweave, an open set of nodes that you don't have to have trust in. So you can replace the centralized parts of any service with decentralized computation, which is available at the prices that people are willing to forego them at, which, as we discussed, as relates to storage, is far, far, far cheaper than what you would pay Amazon and friends, and have that workload executed in a way that you can trust reliably the result. And so this really allows you to go from, you know, sort of create, read, update, delete style web applications to full stack, you know, whatever you can imagine you can build in a decentralized way. And we see it as just like the next inevitable step on this process of building a stack that can replace the centralized technologies that have become dominant on the internet today.
Amazing. And I think that's probably enough to melt most people's brains for now. So perhaps if we can find a slot, you can come on and give us a bit of a deeper dive into AO. Hopefully today's given WordPress developers an idea about how and why to use Arweave, and that it's like totally easy and cheap to do that. Is there anything else that you'd like people to walk away from today?
No, I mean, that was great. It was a very interesting conversation. Yeah, and lots to cover in the future perhaps as well. And just an impassioned, if not now, when, I would say. We ought to write this ship before there are no people like us left that even remember the web of the early days.
If not now, then when. I agree with you, Sam, and I'm sure lots of our listeners do as well. I know how busy you are. I really admire everything that you've managed to build, and I really appreciate you giving up some of your time to come and help the WordPress, WooCommerce, Open Web community understand better. And I hope it sends a whole bunch of more people creating atomic assets so that we can preserve the vitality of the Open Web.
Amazing. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks again for tuning in to openchannel.fm. And make sure you do check out the Black Friday survey from Woo. Just head on over to their blog at woocommerce.com/blog. Until the next time, take care.